Hello and welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selina Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside. We are here today with a very special guest, Chloe Brotheridge.
Hello.
Chloe is author of The Anxiety Solution, A Quieter Mind, A Calmer You. She's a clinical hypnotherapist and nutritionist. She has her own practice in London and has helped hundreds of sufferers overcome severe anxiety. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. We've both been devouring your book. So since the book came out, when did it come out recently?
23rd of February.
Yeah, so it's fresh off the press when we're doing this recording, and we've been loving it. We've been sharing it around other people. They've been loving it. So thank you for writing such an important book. It's obviously really hitting the mark with a lot of people. So we wanted to just dive in and talk to you about the topic of anxiety, how you see it manifesting itself in our society today, particularly amongst women, and the solutions that you're offering to help people to manage their anxiety. So why don't we start with why did you want to write the book?
Well, I've been seeing clients one-to-one in my hypnotherapy practice for the last 5 years or so, and I noticed that I was mostly getting clients with anxiety coming to see me. It was an incredibly common issue, and I noticed that people were experiencing loads of the same sorts of things, loads of perfectionism, you know, not being able to switch off, overthinking, problems with sleep, and all these kind of quite sort of modern things that our modern lives have kind of exacerbated. And I wanted to write a book that addressed a lot of those modern kind of anxiety triggers and help young women and women to feel better and calmer.
Why? So do you find that it is something that really affects women more than men?
Yeah, so the statistics are that 22% of women feel anxious or most of the time.
Wow.
It's about 15% of men.
Yeah.
And if you look at younger women, so 18 to 24-year-olds, it's 29%. So it's something that affects young women the most and definitely more women than men.
Mm. What does that anxiety feel like? Because I think sometimes the issue is that people might not even realise that they are suffering from anxiety. It might have become so normalised. I think that I suffered from anxiety a long time before realising, before being able to label it as anxiety. It was a kind of low-level sort of, anxious feeling, but I don't think I'd necessarily identified it. So how would you describe that anxious feeling?
So I think anxiety is an umbrella term almost to describe lots of different things. I suppose a GP uses a form to help you to diagnose it, ask you different questions and we'll diagnose it based on various things. But it is essentially fear, nervousness, a feeling of unease about things in the future, usually. So that's kind of how you describe it. But it might be about, you know, it might be a general anxiety where you just feel kind of worried and uneasy all the time for no particular reason. Mm. Or it might be social anxiety where, you know, it's much more than just feeling shy. You actually, you know, we're in fight or flight and, you know, very terrified from sort of everyday social things that normal people might sort of find very easy. So it can be loads of different things.
I think my anxiety doesn't feel so much like fear, but it would feel more like not attack mode isn't the right word, but I'm like, right, you know, just like ready, on edge, like hyped up, a level of hyped upness, which is a kind of, that's where my anxiety will come from a lot. And I definitely noticed, it was funny this morning, I was saying to Vicky that I, having had the last 2 weeks very peaceful, very serene, one of those weeks was completely away from phones and laptop, and suddenly I was bombarded with phone calls and text messages, and I immediately felt the anxiety rise up, that lack of control and that kind of like all these things wanting my attention, and just and feeling it's hard, I think, to sometimes find the words for it.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's only when, because I work with lots of people, when they have hypnotherapy, you really kind of relax, and a lot of people don't relax or haven't relaxed. And I say, oh, what do you do to relax? What do you do to switch off? And they're like, I never switch off, not even on holiday. You know, even if I'm watching TV, I've got one hand on my phone, I'm on Instagram. And so I think, just we've forgotten how to relax and yeah. how to switch off, I think, in lots of ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's such a thing as healthy anxiety? Can it ever be a good thing?
So I think a little bit of worry and a little bit of kind of, you know, adrenaline in certain situations is going to be a good thing if it kind of motivates you or gets you to change things or take action.
Mm.
But unfortunately, I think often anxiety makes you want to not take action, hide away. It's kind of paralyzing in excess rather than that kind of good anxiety whereby you might need to run away from a threat or something like that.
Yeah. It's like catching it early. And I love the chapter on anxiety is your biggest teacher, and the Oprah quote, turn your wounds into wisdom. And there was a time where I was really struggling with anxiety, and I wrote a letter to it, a letter to my anxiety, but it was all very much in that approaching it from that perspective, like looking at what it was there to teach me. And it was the catalyst for making a decision to leave a job. And so I listened to that, but I can imagine if you don't listen to those, if you don't see the early signs and the early triggers, and it manifests, does it tend to manifest and grow then? And that's where the anxiety tends to have more power over you.
Yeah, I think it's easy to want to ignore anxiety, to want to maybe just stay busy or use alcohol or, you know, various sort of addictive behaviours to kind of not have to deal with it.
Yeah.
To escape it.
Yeah.
Rather than actually try and look into what it is and deal with whatever's causing the anxiety.
Yeah. But actually, you know, it's emotions are there for a reason, and they're signposts if we kind of really listen to them about what we need to learn about ourselves or change or explore. And I think, we can ask ourselves, what does this anxiety have to teach me? What does it want me to do? I think that can be a really good first step.
I think it's recognizing that anything like this, there is a solution, and it's giving you the information that something needs to change, something's not right. And I think quite often we do normalize it so much. And if you've seen growing up an anxious parent, you might then think, well, this is just what adult life is like. This is one of the things that goes hand in hand with being an adult, or you know, because my mother or my father had it, so it's just like that's just a thing that you have. And that's why it makes sense to me that people go, okay, well then this is what I do to escape it, or this is what I do to manage it, rather than going, you know, you don't actually have to, you don't have to be this way. I think my thing for a long time was, I am an anxious person rather than I have anxiety and there's something I can do about it. And imagine it's at that point, and that's the message I'd love people to hear if they are suffering it, is that there is something you can do about it. Go and see Chloe. Yeah. Get hypnotised. And you'll never be anxious again. Read the book. No, but actually, seriously though, I think it would be, tell us about hypnotherapy, because before we started the recording, I was just like, Chloe was just like, do you know anything what hypnotherapy is? Maybe worth having a conversation about. And I was just like, all I know is that you hang a watch in front of someone's eyes, and Paul McKenna used to get people to eat onions thinking they were apples. And that's my only experience of it. So perhaps it would be useful to hear a little bit from you what hypnotherapy actually is and how it works.
I think the stage hypnosis stuff has given it a bit of a bad name, but also it does show the power, the potential that you can change things with your subconscious mind. But yeah, I don't use any kind of pocket watch. Get people to stare into my eyes.
I'm disappointed at that. You don't get people to stare into your eyes. Your eyes don't start swirling around.
I know. That's what happens. Whenever I go to a dinner party and I say what I do, either people are really intrigued or they're like, don't look at me.
Oh my God, is she hypnotising me now?
Yeah, exactly. But it's really not that. It feels, when you have hypnotherapy, it feels like a deep meditation. It's very effortless. You don't lose control. You're aware of what's being said. But it's just about quietly down the conscious mind and just allowing your subconscious to listen in. And your subconscious is where a lot of those kind of automatic thoughts and feelings and maybe programming and beliefs from when you were younger or kind of in the subconscious. And it's about starting to sort of change those in a very gentle way.
And so do you then reintroduce new beliefs to replace old negative ones? Is that how it works?
So kind of helping them to identify maybe the beliefs that they have taken on board through their lives, you know, common ones about needing to be perfect or you know, not being good enough, incredibly common, and helping people just to sort of take on board a different perspective and, you know, seeing maybe situations from the past differently and thinking about themselves in a different way.
Mm.
And it's just, we're just much more able to absorb things like that during hypnosis.
So during hypnosis, would I be talking back to you, or am I just listening to you? Are you just taking me through a...
Sometimes people are talking back, but usually it's just listening and using your imagination as well. So maybe imagining yourself in a future situation, something that's made you anxious in the past, but seeing yourself, you know, getting on that aeroplane and
feeling confident
and enjoying it, or getting on stage and speaking and kind of imagining it going well, something like that.
So for example, if you suffered from dating anxiety, which is something I know a lot about, but also, you know, we could win in our Get Ready for Love course, and with Vicky, with your clients, you see a lot of dating anxiety, don't you? Mm-hmm. So hypnotherapy would be something where you would, I would kind of imagine going into a dating scenario rather than feeling my usual terror and discomfort and all the anxiety that would come up. You would talk me through it, imagining a new scenario where I feel calm and I can be myself. Is that how
I think so often when if you're anxious about something in the future and you imagine it, we imagine all the things that could go wrong, you know, how, you know, we're going to feel terrible, you know, we think the worst quite often. But it's about kind of introducing that idea that, you know, usually things do turn out all right, and even if things don't go as you'd want, you can usually handle them. So maybe you imagine your worst case scenario and you imagine yourself handling it, and, you know, seeing yourself on that date and he doesn't turn up, or I don't know what the worst thing that could happen on a date would be. But
my fear was always that I would not be able to, like, get the words out, because that did actually happen to me once when I turned up on a date and I was so nervous I went just like, that was my hello, and from that point on I just poured the wine down myself and was just like, bring me another bottle. But yeah, that was always my anxiety. I wouldn't have anything to say, which is ironic because I can't stop talking normally, or that the words wouldn't come out properly. That would look like an idiot. I want to hide and clambering under the table in a date probably isn't the thing you can do, but that's what I wanted to do. But yeah. So
yeah, you could imagine yourself, words flowing, feeling confident, being yourself. Just kind of visualising that.
I think it's a really important message that you have in the book, Just Do You. Mm-hmm. And I think especially the clients on our Get Ready for Love course and the clients that I see through one-to-one coaching, the issue of, I guess it's the challenge of bringing your authentic self on a date and through the fear of being judged and not liked for being you. And so there's a tendency to change who you are, trying to fit into a mold of who you think this person wants you to be, which takes you away from yourself. And so how, if someone was struggling and perhaps having some anxiety around that, around bringing their authentic self on a date, how would you help them to just do them on a date?
Maybe it comes down to sort of people pleasing and thinking that you need to be everything for everyone. And I think another quote in the book is from Carrie Bradshaw, and it's about, I think she says, I'd rather be someone's shot of whiskey than everyone's cup of tea.
I love that.
Just know that you can't please everyone. And, you know, if you are yourself, you're going to be attracting towards you the sort of people that are going to be right for you rather than not. So maybe it would be around visualising what it means to be yourself and kind of mentally rehearsing that in your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before the date.
And it being okay for someone to not be attracted to you and to not like you and not to be wowed by all the words you're saying. Mm. It's okay for someone to be quite bored by you. You're looking at their watch and saying, let's wrap it up now. But being okay with that, because I think that's the other thing, you know, it's like we were doing a podcast about this recently, and just, you know, how, oh, the horror that someone might not like you. It's like, we need to be able to handle that, because of course you're going to have to be able to, not everyone is going to like you. And if everyone does like you say, it means that you're working really hard to be everyone's cup of tea, and that's going to be exhausting. And you're going to be constantly feeling like any minute now it's all going to fall apart, rather than accepting, you know what, some people love me, some people won't, and that is fine.
Exactly.
Because that's how we've all got to be able to be okay with that.
Mm. Yeah, I think trying to control, trying to control another person's thoughts or feelings is impossible.
Yeah.
It's not even about you. It's about their view of the world and their life experiences and their upbringings. They're always filtering, seeing you through their own filter. So knowing that you can't control that.
And just you haven't got a chance anyway, no matter how hard you try. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, I love the quote in the book. It's none of your business what others think about you. Mm. This came up in a conversation we had in another podcast a few weeks back.
Yeah.
It's none of your business. And it just is so liberating to know that. It's like, oh, I don't need to take responsibility for what people think and feel about me because I can't, even if you were just, you know, tried as hard as you could to be this person you think they wanted you to be, they still have their own, like you say, their own, they're projecting their own stuff onto you.
Yeah.
So how would you ever be able, you can't, it's impossible to be able to control it.
Yeah.
Which is a very liberating feeling.
I know, isn't it? Like, God. No, but I do like the idea of, you know, they're looking through a completely different set of lenses than you are. So they will never see you the way that you necessarily want them to anyway.
Yeah.
You know, even in a relationship, they're going to see you the way they want to see you. And you could be worrying, oh, they don't think I'm this, they don't think I'm that. And they could be looking at you with so much love.
Mm.
Like you just, you know, we just forget that people aren't looking at us the way we might be looking at us or we could look at ourselves and, you know, have a great relationship with ourselves. And someone might be like, I can't stand her. All right. Well, you know, that's okay. Like, I get it. That's all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think it is a relief.
Mm.
It's liberating.
Mm.
And I think that we spend, you know, we do have these messages coming at us that, particularly as women, I think that we're supposed to be perfect and likable.
Mm.
Not even lovable, just likable to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a real bind because, yeah, just trying to be likable to everyone, lovable to everyone is hard, is impossible. And so you're always going to be exhausted and always going to be anxious if that's what you're trying to be doing. Your anxiety. No, I'm surprised that more women are feeling anxious, you know, 100% of the time, most of the time.
Yeah. Tell us more about decision fatigue.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Vicky loves this.
Really, really interesting.
This really hit a spot with Vicky.
So we have so many decisions to make every single day. And in modern society, there's far more decisions than we've ever had to make before. Even small decisions that actually, it uses up mental energy. Mm. And they found that there's a thing called decision fatigue, whereby, you know, your brain can't actually handle the amount of information and decisions that we have to make. And you end up not making decisions because it is so exhausting. So we end up not taking action, holding ourselves back or overthinking different kind of decisions and not actually choosing. So it is, it's a real struggle.
Mm.
Even though it seems like a very kind of, I don't know, worrying about what brand of shampoo to buy or something, it seems like such a first world problem, but you know, it can just be an addition to the things we have to kind of worry about, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think I used to be a big kind of environmentalist and so my shopping was, I was obsessed about making sure you having to get the balance between, is it organic, have they used products on it, what countries it come, how far has it traveled, and so in your day-to-day shopping choices there was the impact felt so big on what you were there for, how your shopping choices impacting the world. It was called something like shopping paralysis, when you become so concerned with what you buy and how it's going to impact the world on a larger scale, that eventually it put me off the whole scene altogether. Yeah. And I quit my job at the Environmental Magazine and went off, rebelled and bought a can of Coke, I remember, as a kind of like, it was like a huge fuck you. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I was just like, I can't be given such responsibility every time I go to the shops and buy something.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I quit my job and bought a can of Coke. And an unsustainable fish. Honestly, from Tesco's. My brother was like, no! I was just like, I've done it! I don't care anymore! And I've probably relaxed now and recognised, you know, there's to what degree I'm able to, you know, and give myself a bit of a break. But it became... And I think you can apply that to all sorts of decisions that we're having to make every day.
Yeah.
and, you know, it is exciting. I do struggle with that as well. It's, again, it's a relief hearing that we're having to make so many more decisions today than we did in the past. That is actually causing anxiety. But then what would you say, well, both with that, with the decision making, all these decisions we have to make, how do we manage that? And also, maybe then we go into the next one, because I want you to give me all my solutions today to handle my anxiety triggers. Phone calls, text messages bombarding us. What do we do? Should I just give up having a phone and just tell people to call my landline when I'm in? The pager would be beeping as well. No. Yeah, exactly. Tell them to write me letters from now on, unless it's urgent. Okay, let's start with the decision making. What are your suggestions on how people can manage that so it's not causing them triggering anxiety?
I think there's this idea that we have that if we could overthink something enough, you know, if we could just, you know, worry about every possible outcome and everything enough, then we'll come to the one perfect solution or the one answer or our one perfect career or path in life. And actually there are no perfect decisions. There is no one right path for you. I think we can, you know, it's often what we make of situations that determines the how we feel and the outcome. Mm. So just, take the pressure off yourself that you need to make a perfect decision and just do your best. And often we learn so much once we've made a decision about what is right for us. And it's only once you make the decision, moving to a new city or getting a new job, that we actually really know whether that is the right thing, and you won't necessarily know by overthinking it.
I have a client actually who's was figuring out whether a move to the States was right for her right now. She has decided and she's going. A big thing for her was knowing that she could change her mind, and that wasn't really in her mindset before. It's quite a new thing, and I think many of us probably feel like if we change our mind that we've failed, or if we would come back to the place we were living at before, all our friends that were there would say, oh, you failed at that thing that you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
And that stops you from experimenting and going and trying those things.
That is the key, is experimenting.
Yeah.
And I'm a big one on this. It's like, you know, if you are trying to make a decision about, should I go and live on the other side of the world, or which I did at one point, and I was all set. I went off to decided that I needed to go and live in Canada amongst the mountains, because cities, and particularly London, were just too manic for me, because I hadn't learned how to manage my anxiety at that point. And so I went off and for a couple of months, and then I changed my mind when I came back.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, I thought you were going for a year. I was like, no, I'm back. They're like, great. And that was it. And everyone was delighted that I was back. And so it's just, you know, I didn't feel any shame, that I'd just changed my mind, and it felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But even then I'd like, you know, really set myself up to be out there for a year and really give it a go. And then I was like, no, actually I've changed my mind. And I think it's really important that we allow ourselves to experiment and go, well, yeah, right now this feels like the right thing to do. And then, you know, if I change my mind, then that's also the right thing to do. And that's okay. I think we should be giving ourselves a lot more allowance to experiment and try things out. Because otherwise, the worst thing is to say, well, I've made my bed. I better, you know, stay in this bed that I don't like anymore.
I love what you said about the training montage, the dirty dancing. Tell us about that.
What's that?
I don't know. I think when I kind of think about my life, and the best way to kind of think about it is, you're the kind of character in a movie, and, you know, in an 80s training montage. I was trying to think of more examples for this, but there are loads of examples.
The Dirty Dancing one is perfect.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't know that one? Yeah.
But you try things, you fail, you get better, and the whole time, you know, the audience is rooting for you.
Yeah.
You know, you're still loved no matter what. And actually, if you can think of your life in that way, as, you know, this is just, I'm just in this training montage of life, I'm getting better all the time, then failure feels like just a part of the twist and turn of the narrative.
And that, you know, you can style it out when a jump doesn't work, as she showed us when she moved into that little thumb, that thumb move. I wish you guys could see me do it. Unfortunately, you'll just have to imagine what I was doing then. But she does, she styles it out.
Yeah,
totally exactly. Messed up the jump, and it was fine.
She looked great as she well. It's a really good reference. You all want to be baby then.
God, I love that film.
Me too. talk to us about the fear of success that you mentioned, because I think, you know, fear of failure is widely talked about, but actually fear of success can stop us from reaching our full potential.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know how, which is more common, but it certainly seems like a fear of success is very common. This idea that if I do achieve that certain thing, or if I do, you know, get that higher paid job, will I be able to maintain it? Will I deserve it? Will I, you know, fail once I'm there and more people will notice? So I think, I suppose we hold ourselves back and try and stay kind of safe because we don't want to necessarily move forward and risk not being able to kind of maintain it.
Interestingly, if I look into any fears of success that I might have of taking it to the next level, my fear is that there'll be even more demands on my time, which is something that I'm already going back to the phone thing and how you manage that. That's already something I'm like, no, I need my space. And it's important that I do have that space, but there's an anxiety behind not being able to have a control and having to do stuff and not being able to say no, because then what, you can't be turning down opportunities. So how would you help people manage that if they feel there is a lot of demands on their time? Say with phone calls coming in and messages coming in, what tend to be your tips on managing that?
Well, it might be asking for more help. And I think we mentioned just before about kind of setting boundaries and things, just getting better at that.
Yeah.
And knowing that actually you'll handle whatever comes up. I think so much of anxiety is imagining the future going wrong and us not being able to handle it.
Yeah.
And actually when we're in that situation, we actually do have control and power to change things when we're in that situation and we know what we're dealing with. Rather than being kind of a hypothetical fear. So that might be one thing, just reminding yourself that you can handle things and change your mind and ask for help if and when you need it.
And an affirmation that I loved in the book is, no matter what happens, I'll handle it.
That's my favourite.
I love that. I'm really going to remember that.
That reminds me of the one you say, Vicky, you've got this. I love that one. You've got this.
I think you say it in the book as well.
It's such a good one. If I could just have that, if I whispered into my ear throughout the day.
You've got this.
But as you said, you're very gentle. You've got this.
Yeah.
How do you find that anxiety affects people within their relationships? Do you find that it's can be a problem?
I think it can often sort of bring up a lot of anxiety or be a source of anxiety, definitely. I remember when I first got together with my boyfriend 7 years ago, it was the point at where I realised I needed to get some help and go and get some therapy properly, because it brought up so much insecurity and so much kind of fear of being abandoned and left, and I was reading his emails and checking his phone and that sort of thing. It was terrible.
Wow. Definitely. Did you?
I don't recommend it at all.
So that didn't help then?
Didn't help
to calm your mind.
Don't do that.
Did he find out?
Yeah, he knows.
He knows now because he wrote it in the book. Yeah. He was just like, what the?
It was a long time ago, darling. when I was like filtering through his emails, I knew I needed help. Because I think whenever we're in a loving relationship, it brings up our stuff because it almost feels a bit safer for that stuff to kind of rise to the surface.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of where I realised actually was seeking love outside of myself and trying to get him to reassure me and affirm me all the time, and actually I needed to sort of accept myself a little bit more, or a lot more, and love myself more. And I think that's a common one in relationships, where it can bring up stuff like jealousy and insecurity. That's really, I see it a lot with my clients, definitely.
I think that in my relationship now, it brought up stuff, unresolved stuff, also from my childhood. You know, you always go back and it's from there, from younger wounds, but around rejection, which I'd experienced a lot in my dating relationship. Then I was with a guy who I know absolutely loves me and he's really the right person for me. I felt very clear about that. But actually what did then start to come up was like this sort of underlying, all my dreams were suddenly about rejection, being rejected the whole time. Not by him, but by other people in my dreams. And I think it does. I think it sometimes it just triggers stuff that until then had been buried. Yeah, your relationship, it is a mirror, isn't it?
Mm.
All that stuff that you managed to keep, managed to sort of, you know, skip around for years. When you really find someone, I think the deeper you go into relationship, the more layers it kind of peels off and it's like, oh, God, hang on a minute. But I do also think you're perhaps sometimes when you're in the safe hold of love in a relationship, you actually then have the strength to deal with some of the stuff. That's why, you know, I'm a real believer that the things come up when you're ready to deal with them. When I had a really destructive relationship in the past, it wasn't until 3 years later that I was out of it that I was able to actually go into it and go and deal with all the stuff that it had brought up until I felt strong enough to deal with it. So I think, yeah, that's an interesting one, relationships.
Yeah.
The anxiety as a signpost is showing stuff that's coming up that you need to perhaps look into. I like the idea of the anxiety, listen to it. Go and have a chat and see what it's telling you, what it's you know, signposting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think so often we don't want to feel it, obviously, because when you're anxious, it feels so horrible that maybe you stay busy or you drink alcohol or you just kind of hope it'll get better by itself. But it's, you know, it's emotions need to be listened to and, you know, felt. And if we don't, often they'll manifest themselves in the body or something, you know. A lot of people with IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Almost always they're people that are kind of holding on to their feelings and not kind of expressing them or not feeling them, kind of repressing things, or, you know, manifest in some other way in your body.
Yeah.
So we need to listen and just asking yourself, what does this anxiety want me to know? Or what does it want me to change or learn about myself or heal?
Yeah.
I think if you can figure out what that is, it shows you the way to find your own anxiety solution in a way.
You're big into yoga, aren't you?
I dabble. I'm into meditation. I think yoga for me is the gateway drug into meditation.
Yeah,
for me.
Okay.
but yeah, I think meditation, because it actually, and not many people really know this, it actually changes the structure of your brain. So you grow more grey matter in the front part of your brain and the two hemispheres communicate more coherently with one another.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't necessarily change the stressful kind of events in your life. You can't move to a desert island necessarily, but I like to think of it as upgrading your hardware so you can make your brain better able to, equipped to kind of deal with anxiety triggers and stress and that sort of thing.
Like setting you up in the right way, in a way that supports you. And what's your meditation practice?
Transcendental meditation. Where you say they give you a mantra, sort of a sound, a Sanskrit sound, and you just say it in your own mind, and it kind of takes you into yourself, into this quiet place deep inside yourself, where you just feel very calm and happy when you do it.
So into the stillness.
Yeah.
I like guided meditation. I like stuff that visualizing into that space. Although I can't remember the name of it now. What's the slow yoga?
Yin
yoga.
Ooh,
that really gets me into that nice stillness, place of stillness. Really works for me. I'm a yoga dabbler. I used to be more into it, but now I just like the yoga where I just lie in a slightly uncomfortable position for some time, and it can be really challenging actually. But when you hit the sweet spot of like calm and stillness, it's like, oh, there we are. Hi. I don't know why I'm not in here more.
If you could take a few different techniques from the book to manage anxiety on a desert island, what would they be?
Ooh.
Great question, Vicky.
You'd have a lot of time on a desert island, probably, and a lot of no technology in order to have a break. Well, exercise, you know, it's such a basic thing, and almost, I don't know if it's too simple to even suggest that, but, you know, we need to burn off the adrenaline. If we're often we're sitting at our desks and the adrenaline is pumping, and we're just kind of stewing in all these chemicals in our bodies, and actually we need to move in that situation to get rid of the tension, get rid of the adrenaline. So walking, running, any kind of exercise is going to be a good idea. Meditation, of course. What else on a desert island? You don't have a pen and paper, do you, on a desert island?
You can if you want. You can have five things.
Yeah. I reckon writing things down, you know, don't allow worries and thoughts just to kind of run amok. Get them written down, get them put into words, get your feelings put into words, because it lowers the stress response when we actually put our feelings into words. I'm feeling anxious about this. Even if we tell someone or write it down, it has a physical effect and calms us down. So I think it's really important. Mm. Yeah, write it down.
So if there's one key message you'd like people to go away with, having listened to this podcast, what would it be?
So I would probably say that kind of one of the first steps to kind of managing anxiety is to just be very kind to yourself and don't fight against anxiety. Don't beat yourself up for feeling the way you do. Allow yourself to feel anxious. Don't try and force it to go away. But take care of yourself and schedule in time to take care of yourself and make it a priority. Because when you take care of yourself, I think other things tend to fall into place when you do that first.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Chloe.
Thank you.
That's been great. So if people want to obviously buy your book, should they go to Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon, or it's in Urban Outfitters and in all the bookshops.
And
all the good bookshops.
and if they want to, where can they find you online?
So I'm at karma-u.com, and people can get a free hypnotherapy MP3 if they head there.
Oh, lovely. Oh, I'm going to do that. No pocket watch required. Thank you, Chloe.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, then come subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.